Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000. It's Brian Hadley and Mark Zander. The sunshine streaming through this window, burning my retinas. It's a good thing on a Sunday morning, broadcasting from the old National Bank studio. This is ESPN 1000. We're here to talk sports and some other stuff. Brian, how are you today?
I am doing terrifically well. How are you, sir?
I'm good. 3-2. Wild pitch. Hey, wild if pitch. We can't get it done, I'll take the other team getting it done for us.
Bob Rosenberg, the longtime scorer up at Wrigley Field and also does work for the Bulls forever. That used to be a signature call. Wild pitch. You'd hear him on the microphone in the press box.
It's fun to say, right? Wild pitch.
Yeah, Rosie would be snoozing a lot, but sometimes wake up, wild pitch. that's old school, too, right? You have the Josh Harrison sack bunt, too.
And I'll tell you something. Boy, Twitter was on fire.
Yeah.
Because there are people these days that just absolutely hate the bunt.
Wasted at bat to the new age.
I know. Right? And yeah. I want to dig into that a little bit today on the show, because I think it still has its place. But there are some people that are just freaking out. And it's like, that couldn't have been a better spot to bunt. That's absolutely old school, small ball, Aussie baseball.
Get him on, get him over, and get him in and buried the lead. I mean, Gavin Sheets has a big situation in what, the fifth inning, second and third, doesn't get the job done.
And then he comes back and gets it done, not once but twice, the big home run. And then in the ninth to set up Adam Engel, who pinch ran for him on third. It was a double, and then Adam got over to third on the bunt from Harrison, which is Aussie baseball. Remember that whole term, Aussie
small
baseball,
ball,
which by the way, Aussie on the NBC Sports Chicago yesterday, I think it was pregame, or no, it must have been postgame at that point, was talking about how he used to just laugh when people called it Aussie baseball. He's like, no, it's not Aussie baseball. That's the way we play because that's the way you play baseball.
It's baseball.
It's just baseball. It's not strategy. All about, and he is so anti, he doesn't want to hear about exit velocity. He doesn't want to hear about any, you know, hard hit balls. It doesn't matter.
Barrel rate.
Yeah, barrel rate and all that stuff. And he's right. He's like, just, you know, what was it? I think it was the Guardians, one of those games recently that we played last week where they just killed us with all these soft hits. That's a way to win the game. We don't need home runs. You know, they're great if you can get them, but
Gavin Sheets, you know, we know he went down and he said, you know, he found me, got the love of the game again, and relaxed, and he came back.
And it was hot, then he cooled off. And
he was 4-for-32 going into the game yesterday.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he's battling for his White Sox roster spot. Maybe that's overstating it, but
At this point, he may be trade bait, too.
Yeah, exactly right. And look, and then he goes opposite field for that double, too.
Yes, so. And he's been doing that a little bit lately, which is only going to endear him to the staff, the coaching staff, as it should. He just needs to be a little more consistent. But let's not forget, he's a young guy. He had some tough times down in, Triple A or probably Double A at that point. And you know, they've got to develop. Either they develop and they come ready, or they do a little developing on this level. And that's what we're seeing from him. But yesterday it paid off. It paid off big. He was a big hero of the game.
Yeah, Connor McKnight had him on. This goes back maybe a couple months on White Sox Weekly. And you root for a guy when he's just honest, and he was brutally honest in the post game talking to the beat guys, saying they asked him how to characterize the season. And he said subpar. I mean, I'm not good enough. And it was great that he had a night.
Wait a minute, Brian. That you know what that kind of sounds like a leader, although he's not the leader. You know what Tim Anderson said when somebody brought up the suspension? I'm not talking about it.
Of course not. Yeah. Three games.
So he's not talking about it. That's our leader. And then you have somebody like Sheets who is admitting that he hasn't played up to his expectations and he needs to do better. Wouldn't it go a long way if Tim said, I will talk about it. I should not have done that. That was stupid on me. I'm going to take it and I'm going to be better. Wouldn't have been great if he did that. That's what a leader does.
The only thing is he probably couldn't say that yesterday because he's appealing the three games and wants to knock it down to 2
okay.
or 1.
Okay, so then hopefully. So
he can't admit that publicly and say, I shouldn't have done it.
Okay,
then,
okay. Yeah. All right, so after,
You want accountability.
I would love to hear that, and he certainly does have that chance. And I get why he probably couldn't do it yesterday. I'm still wired about this, though. I'm just super wired about this.
Yeah, he was told by, don't talk about it. Take the fifth. Yeah, but look, why does it have to be so damn hard? You know, God bless Gavin Sheets, and God bless they pulled Johnny Cueto pitched so damn well and should have won that game anyway.
Yeah.
But look, I guess.
And you know what, about the, just jumping in real quick on Johnny, he has his tough spots, but the man gets out of them. That's what good pitchers do. Good pitchers, it's great to ace a game, to burly a game, you know, let's use a Sox reference there.
Yeah,
but that's not going to happen all the time. But to have a tough inning, to get out of it, and then to have your offense respond to give you the lead that you need to be able to get out of those tough spots, that's a team working together, and that's not what we've seen consistently.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I get that Paul Blackburn is an all-star this year, and overall his numbers are really, really impressive. But his last three starts, he had allowed 21 runs and 20 hits and 14 and a third.
All you have to do is run into the Sox to get out of a bad spin, apparently.
I mean, Texas torched him for 10 runs Sunday.
Right.
I mean, 6-3 and a 2.90. And so, but we've seen it with the Sox staff, too, right? You know, we've seen Giolito go into a little rut, and unfortunately, and it happens. I get it. But that guy is there waiting for you. And instead, he walks out of there with a 2-0 lead. He doesn't walk anybody. You know, he just 5 hits, 4 strikeouts. Let's get him out of there and give him a feel good because he was really scuffling. But boy, to have to rally against Oakland did win 4 in a row. So I guess, you know, every dog has its day. The Cubs have won. You know,
well, as they say, it's not who you're playing. It's who you're playing and what date.
Yeah,
when you're playing them.
Yeah. So anyway, I mean, God bless the White Sox, but they just can't have a laugher against the worst team in the American League. It's entertaining, and we can sit here and say, you know, we can now debate small ball or Aussie ball or just baseball, but God bless them, they needed that one.
They did, and especially going into today where you know you're going to get a hell of a performance from our ace, Dylan Cease.
Mm-hmm.
Will the bats show up today? Now, as we've seen, when we have a win like this, it usually means good things. So to take 2 of 3 when you really should have swept them, but to take 2 of 3, especially when we've been so bad at home, okay, that's a good start.
Yeah. Hey, win series. Okay. I mean, you'd like to sweep the Oakland team, but that's
especially as bad as they are. But again, they came in hot, which everybody has. Every dog has their day.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting, and you know, Rick Hahn still working the phones, I hope. I mean, I expect that he is. We have a Twitter poll question today. By the Tuesday trade deadline, 5 o'clock Chicago time.
Jake's got his finger on that bulletin sounder in case something happens today.
Well, how many deals will Rick Hahn make? 0, 1, 2, 3, or more than or 4 or more? I would hope it's not 0. I would expect it to be at least 1.
Look, how would you react if you want to jump in here? 312-332-3776. You know what I'm going to ask. How would you react if Rick Hahn does nothing by the trade deadline? How nuts would you go, Sox fans?
Is 1 enough? Is 2 enough? You have a lot of needs here, and I don't know, again, big picture. Is he going to be realistic and say, well, this team's a 500 team by definition? Every day we have a chance to go maybe 2 games over? No, we haven't done that since 6-4 in April. A GM has to protect the organization, right? The manager's job is to win games. The GM's job is to also look big picture, and we've talked about it.
Yep.
They should win this division still. I mean, look, Minnesota needs probably a starter and 2 bullpen pitchers.
And they're trying to. They're working the deadline too. Their phone is on.
And they probably think
Guardians as well.
They should be up 6-7 games on this division.
Right.
But if you're Rick Hahn and say, you know, we're not the Yankees this year, we're not Houston, And keep your eye on teams like Tampa, because David Peralta's off the board. I tried to sell him to you yesterday.
I saw that. As soon as I saw that, I was like, well, you know what? I guess Han has a plan. What is the plan, Rick? Yeah. And by the way, something we've overlooked, Luis Robert.
Yeah.
Still not playing the rehab stint, and we're going to find out more tomorrow. From the beginning, when you get taken out for dizziness and nobody's talking about anything, and then they say, remember, they said, okay, when we get back to Chicago, we'll evaluate. We never heard anything from that.
No, Rickon just said that they had him looked at in Minnesota and then back here in Chicago.
Right. But no disclosure. Yeah. No disclosure. And then we're being told he has a rehab assignment. And my first question was, rehab from what? Can somebody say something? And now that's been delayed. So is Rick Hahn have to prepare himself for no Luis Robert?
Well, now
I don't know what's going on.
Now he's got cold symptoms, whatever that entails. You know, first thing I think
is he had COVID. Is this long haul COVID symptoms Moncada had last year?
And that's why he wasn't there yesterday. Right. He's not going to be out there today.
Right.
But boy, this
makes me nervous.
Yeah, it should make nerves.
I mean, before he was benched or taken out of the game for dizziness, he was killing it at the plate, having problems in the field.
Yep.
And if it is a vertigo situation, I've never had that. I know people who have suffered from it. It is no bueno. And it is not necessarily something that goes away quick. Mm. So does Rick Hahn in the trade market have to prepare for Luis Robert not being an asset for the remainder of the year? Your guess is as good as mine. I'm expecting the worst, right? Because we're not talking about it. Nobody's talking about anything.
Yeah, I mean, you would like some clarity. Yeah. Hey, don't worry, he's going to be back in 10 days or, whatever. But we're not getting that.
Nope.
And now they're not talking about the dizziness. They're talking about cold symptoms. I don't know what that means.
That's awfully fishy, right? Because if you're talking about dizziness, then you're talking about cold. You're trying to delay talking the truth, it seems. And they're trying to figure out what this is and how they talk about it publicly. It just doesn't seem good. 312-332-3776.
And we also, we buried the lead because Jed Hoyer already has a deal under his belt. It was a cold play by Jed. He sent Chris Martin to the Dodgers.
Oh, wow.
I was up all night.
And thank you for that. And I forgot my snare because you haven't really delivered. So I forgot my snare and I can't give you a rim shot. And I'm sorry. I owe you a rim shot.
Zach McKinstry. The much anticipated Zach McKinstry era. He started two games for the Dodgers. Now, being the optimist Cubs fan, which I already always am, I'm going to believe that all that Dodgers talent kept him down, and he
is that what
he,
it is. Yeah. It's almost like Jed said to one of the maybe one of the interns in the office, "Hey, you want to make a trade? Go ahead, pull this one off."
I mean, so he can play every position. I mean, he might even be able to pitch, right? Take Schwindel's deal when they're getting hammered. But he plays every infield position, and he played both corner outfield positions. But he's 27. Now, he's 1-for-11 with the Dodgers this year, but it was a home run. So that must have been a hell of a home run that really impressed some Cubs scout out there. But anyway, they had to have this guy. He's 27 years old, and we're actually going to see him on the roster. So, Jed probably, just exhausted already. He's going to take a day before he gets to the Wilson Contreras stuff.
Or the intern gets a day off for a good job.
He got promotion.
Viva la vida to Chris Martin. Bye-bye, buddy. There you go. There's your Coldplay reference.
Thank you very much.
All right. All right. We're back to talk more baseball. We'll get to the Bears. Got a lot to do. We're here till 12:30. It's Hanley and Zander on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Bring up Gavin Sheets. First pitch swing and high fly ball. Deep right field. And this one is tied. Gavin Sheets launches the first pitch for a two-run home run in the right. His eighth of the year, 2-2 ball game.
He got the barrel on a fastball up and did not miss it. Timing is everything. You get the hit by pitch and then immediately be ready to take advantage of the mistake by the pitcher on the next pitch.
Hey, Gavin.
How are you guys doing?
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the home run first. Pruitt, you hadn't seen him before, right?
Yeah, I had never seen him before. You know, I wanted to get something back for that at bat before that. You know, second and third, got to get that job done. But fun to get that at bat right there and be aggressive early and get a pitch to handle.
Gavin, earlier in your career, you're known as a guy going to pull the ball, big power. But does it show your maturation as a hitter that you could also hit a double down the left field line in the same night?
Yeah, that's huge. You know, that's how you stay here. You know, obviously the power is a huge, huge part of my game, but, you know, I got to be able to hit the ball as well in all fields. And so, you know, that at bat was huge right there. And we got it done with Jay Hagan, the bunt down, and then Adam scoring on the wild pitch.
Take us inside the dugout. Fourth inning, double play. Fifth inning, I know you wanted to come through. You don't.
Yeah.
I know it's frustrating, right?
Sure.
But you still know that you're in the game.
Yeah, absolutely. You know that the big one's coming up. You know, you got the seventh and the eighth and ninth, and that's when the biggest at-bats usually happen. So you got to stay in it. You got to want the next at-bat, and when you get it, you got to do something with it. So I was able to do that tonight, and, you know, wanted to pick up Cueto. Cueto threw the ball unbelievably, and he didn't deserve to get a loss tonight.
Well, look, we're really happy for you. You came through in a big way, and your teammates stayed right with it because for a while, didn't look like you were going to score. But what do you think will be the mood going into tomorrow, the deciding game of this series?
I think it just took a big swing. You know, we got to get the one tomorrow, get this series, and keep it going. This is the push we've been needing.
All right, congrats, Gavin. Go enjoy this one.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Right. Nice job.
Ah, wow. Look at that. Coldplay. Got to play that. Right? It should have been a Chris Martin highlight.
Fit it in.
Are there any Chris Martin highlights?
Easy.
Okay, all right.
The Dodgers wanted him to hit there. You go.
Apparently they did. Yeah, I saw that trade yesterday. I'm like, I would have expected a bigger name in there, but I guess they're starting really slow.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't get, again, I think Zach was just being held down by the layers and layers of Dodger talent. And he's 27 and watching
blue. And Jed sees something that nobody else sees or prioritizes.
So when they're ready to win, he'll be, I don't know, 35.
Yeah, okay. So we've got Sheets who's saying all the right things. If we can just find a way to, well, and I feel like he's going to get to the point where he's more consistent at the plate. If we can find a way to put a gold glove in his hand, then he's a real asset. I mean, you know, sometimes it's been shaky in the field. And the Twitterverse gets awfully upset when he is out in the field, if you've noticed.
Right. Well, and look, I mean,
and he's not a natural outfielder.
No, Sox fans are nervous for a reason. This team makes them nervous, and they made him nervous again last night.
Mm-hmm.
But I love Tony said it was a 500-foot home run. I think StatCast had it 400. But no, why quibble over 100 feet? You root for a kid like that, and you know, as much as Sox fans last week were saying this, I hate this team, he seems like a likable guy. Right?
Absolutely. I mean, saying the right things, young, energetic, wants to get better. He admitted, you know, being able to hit to the opposite field, that's how you stay in the game. That's how you stay up here. You know,
Tony
doing
appreciates
the
that,
little
believe
things.
Me. Yeah, Tony appreciates that more than the home run, probably. But you needed the home run. Let's not downplay that.
Right. We don't get many of them, so every one that we need. It would be nice to be at a point to where it's like, wow, we really didn't need that home run. I don't think we're going to say that at all this year.
No, this team's makeup doesn't seem to have that, you know, hey, we'll just give you five easy ones, laughers, and, you know, we go out there and go Yankees on teams. We'll just, you know, here's 10-1, here's 8-2, you know, make it easy. Jump out to a 5-run lead and coast. That's not this team.
No, unfortunately.
Which brings us back to Rick Hahn, and how aggressive is he going to be? I mean, does he in his heart of hearts say, this isn't our year, even though there's a lot of year left, not as much as you would hope, maybe, but we aren't the Astros. We're not the Yankees.
Well, we're not going to sell.
Yeah.
But
no.
How much are we going to buy, and will it make an actual impact?
Yep. And, you know, realistically, Sox fans, 312-332-3776, if you're sitting in Rick Hahn's chair, is it all about swinging for the fences and trying to get back in this thing and be the team we thought going into the season was going to contend for something? Or have you seen so much now that you're like, well, I can't mortgage our future, whatever that is to you as a Sox fan, because even if you get into October baseball by winning the division, there are too many holes here.
And you right. Don't, and yeah. Some would argue, and we've certainly heard them on the phone lines, some would argue that the future that we thought was here isn't really talented, mm-hmm. and they should just start blowing it up now, which we've seen the talent. It's there. It just doesn't coalesce, and it's not consistent. Now, yesterday, I was thinking about this, and I want your input, Brian. Tony La Russa, he's hired. Jerry wants him. We remember the famous press conference where Rick Hahn said, it has been decided.
Yes.
Right? And yeah, you never say that if you want to take credit for something, no. You never say that. Yeah. So we know he wasn't taking credit for that. So who is Tony La Russa accountable to? Now, we're not mad at Tony today because they won yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the day before, we were. And we'll be mad at him again, hopefully no time soon. But who is he accountable to? I would suppose he's not to Rick. Is he to, is Jerry talking to him? Is Kenny Williams, is he accountable to Kenny Williams? You wonder.
And that's a really interesting question. And I think first and foremost, he's accountable to himself. So because
be the problem.
Right. Right. I mean, but could Rick Hahn, I remember one of those games that someone said baseball ops had suggested a change in the lineup and it worked out.
Right. And who is baseball ops?
Yeah, what is that exactly? Is it just here's the printout from the computer and let's try this? I think Tony said it. If I feel like the club isn't responding to me, that's when I will go and say it's my time's now. I got to get out of here.
And some would argue the club is not responding to him consistently.
Right. But I'm sure he talks to Jerry. And they're very good friends. I mean, it wasn't just a trying to right a professional wrong on Jerry's end. They've stayed friends for decades, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. there's that relationship. I don't know. I think Tony probably respects Rick Hahn and certainly Kenny Williams because they've been doing this for a long time. But remember, Tony was up in the Arizona front office, is head of baseball ops for a long time. So he probably thinks he's got some handle on what that looks like from their chair as well, right? So he might... I'm sure he respects them and gives them their due and listens to their thoughts. But to answer a question, I don't think he takes marching orders from anybody.
And outside looking in, as this is what we're here to do, it doesn't seem like he's really in touch at that level with the experience of being baseball ops.
Right.
From our point of view, it doesn't seem like he is.
Well, Arizona didn't have exactly right.
And wasn't he
success.
In Boston, too?
Boy,
he was with another team as well. I could look it up. I thought it was Boston, but he was up in the big office with another team as well.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't think he's arrogant to the point where get out of my office. Take your thoughts and tell your story walking. I think he's open to suggestions and conversation, but ultimately, I don't think anyone tells him how to. Run a team, run a clubhouse, make out a lineup, question his pitching. I mean, look, Rick Hahn will go into the office and say, hey, what was your thought process when you pulled him and brought in this guy, right?
Yeah, not what the hell were you doing?
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Rick throws the TV remote when he's folding laundry, like he said he does when they disappoint him. But I just think that Tony's been doing this at such a high level from the dugout forever that he's open to conversation, but I don't think he's open to second guessing.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Although we would like to see some accountability.
Yes.
It's just, yesterday it just occurred to me that, he has been hired. He's been hired by the owner who does not manage the club day to day. So who is he answering to? Hopefully somebody. Hopefully somebody's in his ear from time to time.
Yeah, I think they touch base and Kenny whenever he's around or picks up the phone and
we still don't really know what Kenny does.
Well, he goes into the clubhouse once in a while and says it's not good enough.
Yeah. I mean, Rick Hahn is the GM, but really is Kenny still the GM, and Rick Hahn is basically the get-her-done guy?
Boy, that would chap my ass if I was Rick Hahn, that the perception's even out there still that he has the title, but he doesn't have the authority. And we, you know, and when you do have the owner hire the manager, and Rick has to come out and say it has been decided that he is the best man for this job.
That would make me nuts. Just that, because
you know, you're sending a message because you want everyone to know you didn't sign on to this program. But ultimately, you are the general manager, and that is normally under your purview of things.
That's right. And when any one of the shows here on ESPN 1000 wants to talk about the White Sox, they talk to Rick Hahn.
Absolutely.
Not Kenny Williams, Rick Hahn. So Rick is the point guy. So how much does he get to say, and does he get to, you know, does Tony La Russa have accountability to Rick Hahn? We really don't know. We don't understand the dynamic. I would like to think that there is some accountability somewhere beyond Jerry. I don't know. 312-332-3776. Take your phone calls, talking White Sox. We'll talk the Cubs, see if there's any trades while we're on the air today until 12:30.
Jake, are you efforting Zach McKinstry? Have we heard back from him yet?
No comment.
I'm getting tickets for the first game. I've been waiting for this trade.
Funny. You know when the first game is?
No.
Right. No. Right. That's if you can afford another ticket after spending all that money on Bruce. You're
going to see some of his jerseys next to Wisdom and Suzuki out there?
Oh, hey, you know what? If someone's wearing a McKinstry jersey, Tyler's going to be all over it.
Wow.
Tyler's going to be all over that.
You know that there's someone, whether in Cubs fandom or any one of the other major league baseball teams, that their mission is to get a new jersey.
The first ASAP, right?
After a trade.
I'm guessing Zach's parents don't even have a Zach McKinstry jersey. Maybe that's mean-spirited. But, yeah, there's some guy out there who's going to be walking around the concourse at Wrigley Field.
I'm the first McKinstry. One. Look at me. Yeah. I'm the first one. Well, I'll tell you something. Way back in the day, I felt like I was the first and only one to get a Wayne Pressly Blackhawks jersey.
Wow.
Because I was really impressed. Well, one year he was scoring like crazy. I'm like, I like this kid. I get the jersey. They trade him. And then...
How much did that set you back?
I can't remember. I mean, you know, back in the early 90s, it's probably like $65. 60, but back in the early 90s, you know, $65 wasn't nothing. You know, and
they weren't selling.
I was just starting my radio career, so I could tell you it was a lot of money. Yeah. And then we get Joe Murphy.
Oh,
so then what I did was I had Pressly removed because they both wore 17. I had Pressly removed. And then have Murphy, but there was still some glue from the letters, so I took red permanent marker and just kind of colored in because it was a Red Hawks jersey. And I rolled with the Murphy jersey for a while. And, of course, you know about Joe Murphy, what a sad story that is. But he played for the Hawks, and, you know, he was a good guy.
He's a good guy, but, I mean, you're not going to find an otter. I mean, he was in his own little world.
Yeah, but you know what ultimately happened to him, right?
No, I lost track of it.
You know what? That's a hell of a tease. I'm going to bring that up on the other side of the break.
Yeah, because everyone in that dressing room knew that they liked him. He's a likable guy.
Yeah, no, this is... Ooh, I can't... Okay, all right, this is good. This is one hell of a tease, Brian Hanley. We will come back from this break, and I will tell you what happened to Joe Murphy and what he's doing today. And
I will make sure I will study. Do you still have the jersey?
No, that's long gone. Okay. Long gone. This is ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Brian Hanley, Mark Zander broadcasting on ESPN 1000 from the Old National Bank Studio. You can see us on Twitch anytime. twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Brought to you by the Jim Irsay Collection. All right, so we were talking about Joe Murphy, once number 17 for the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, you were talking about how he was just a bit of an odd duck, right, Brian? Covering the Hawks for all those years during that time?
He was very eccentric. I mean, there were some characters on those teams like Broadway Bernie Nichols.
Grimson.
Yeah, and you might have seen Bernie. He lived in the Hancock, and he liked the nightlife. He liked the boogie.
I rode the elevator with Murph and Nichols one night after they were out drinking.
Yeah, well, and there was a lot of that on that
team. Yeah, of course.
And I remember Broadway Bernie Nichols saying he was what we would say not showing up for a lot of games. Like, on the ice, he was there, but he wasn't really pulling his weight. And we were asking him about it, and he said, well, don't worry, I'll be there for the important games. And we went back to...
Now, here's a guy who won the Stanley Cup with the Edmonton Oilers, along with Joe Murphy.
Right, right. And, you know, knew what it looked like and how to do it. But then we went, I don't know, was Daryl Sutter or Brian Sutter, who was coaching at the time, because I covered both of them. I love the Sutters. I think it was Brian. And we went back and we were talking to him about Bernie Nichols. And he said, we told him what he said, that he'll be there for the important games. And he said, why don't you go back and ask him to circle those on the schedule for me? Because I'd like to know which games those are.
Right.
He was not, I mean, the Sutters were serious as a heart attack. They had great sense of humor.
Yeah.
But there were no easy games on the schedule. There was no...
Of course not.
I'll be ready for the important games, right, because every game was important to the first family of hockey.
So here's the payoff on the Joe Murphy thing, right? We got into this because I talked about how I had a Wayne Pressly jersey, and as soon as he got traded, I had to kind of do an audible.
Doctor it up.
Joe Murphy slid into number 17, and that was Wayne Pressly's jersey number. So I'm like, okay, I'll just change the nameplate. With a little, ingenuity, I got that done. So Joe Murphy, this was according to CBC.ca, which is CBC Canada. Is the major broadcasting company in Canada. According to their website, and this is 2018, and I read this, Joe Murphy was homeless.
Oh, boy.
In Kenora, Ontario, and he's been homeless ever since. And there was an update in 2020. On this, but he's been homeless. It's been a real sad story. I don't remember the end of his career, but there was a hit. He was playing for the Red Wings after they we're playing against the, and I'm trying to see here. I guess Sean Burr hit him into the boards, and his head was down, and he says that was basically the beginning of his brain trauma and his issues and everything. And I'm looking for an update to see what's going on today, but it looks like here's a quote from Rick Westhead. You get your bell rung, you turn self-medicating, both alcohol and painkillers, the toll it takes on players year after year. So Joe basically got hooked on drugs and alcohol and found himself homeless. And I don't know what's happening right now, but there's actually where is the documentary, if you can still find it? It was Finding Murph on TSN. It was a mini documentary in 2018, which I saw. And that's been the situation on Joe Murphy. You know,
I mean, and that's awful. I mean, we're having a lot of fun with it until then.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Look, you used to, cover the Hawks. It's not a widely known story, but a very sad story, and not a unique story. We remember Theo Fleury and how I covered
Theo too.
Yeah. And how much trouble and the background of sexual abuse in the minor hockey, and we know that story, and he was part of that. It's just a mess.
And the Blackhawks publicly said that he was clean and sober, and so was Proby, and nothing further than the truth.
I remember all that as a fan.
But as I'm trying to, Joe Murphy, he should have a pension. I know I'm sure his pensions go, the NHL's is not the greatest, but there should be some income there, right? I mean.
Yeah, you know what? I would have to dig into the article, and I'll send you the link. And I'm still trying to dig up what's the situation now, because I don't see an update. But very sad story about him. Very sad story.
It's awful. But I lost track, because it's been a little bit more than a minute since I covered those teams.
Yeah, right.
But that dressing room had personalities and oversized personalities like JR. Mm-hmm. And then they had just guys like Joe Murphy. And I mean, there, that was quite a collection of different types of people.
Those were back in the days when I had season tickets at the old stadium, right on the second level.
Yeah, we would count the literally sit up in the press box and count the number of people in attendance. We could just take there's 20 in that section. There's, you know, 25 over here.
Yeah.
They would announce whatever.
Those were the
13.
Days where I would walk in with my Hawks jacket with beers lined up from my forearm to my armpit and just walk in and keep my arms tight to my body. And they didn't do anything.
Well, you
and
spent went in and I brought $65 my... on the Presley sweater, so you needed
yeah,
to save,
I had
on
to
the,
save money
on
somewhere.
The beer budget.
And actually, since you were at all these games, you may know where I sat because I sat behind some guy who was a complete nut, and he was very entertaining to be around. And he had a little ref stuffed doll, and he hung it by a rope off the balcony, and his head would rip off. And when he would get mad, he would rip his head off.
Awesome.
And they let him just always hang that there every game.
Was it a Don Koharski doll?
Not, it? Well, it represented any ref that he did not like.
Wow. I didn't see.
You didn't see that little detail. That crazy stuff happened on the 300 level at the old stadium.
I remember Alex Zamenhof came after me. We were on went from Vancouver to Edmonton.
Hip check?
No, but it was the Alpo Suhonen team and. And
those are some dark years. My brother and I talk about those years all the time. How you got through those years without drinking yourself silly, Brian?
Well, I'm not saying I didn't.
right.
So the inmates
you live
were,
to tell.
Inmates are running the asylum really throughout that short Alpo Sohon stand here, but. So after a Vancouver game where I just unloaded, I wrote a column and I just eviscerated everyone and Zamenhof. And it was a couple of those guys because we would go into the dressing room after the game and they were just horse bleep for, ever. And you'd go in there and they're trying to figure out, why the beer isn't as cold as it should be. And they start drinking before they even took their sweaters off. And
it's like a scene out of Slapshot.
Yeah. So I basically said, the inmates are running the asylum and someone's got to rein this thing in. And a couple of them were waiting for me in Edmonton on the next game. But yeah, it was part and parcel of doing the job. But,
oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one good thing as a sports writer, when you get the knife out to carve, those are fun to write. They're easy to write because you've been watching this crap forever.
And it's been building up.
Yeah, and
it almost writes itself. I'll bet.
Yeah, yeah, and you see, all the off the ice stuff too, which maybe you've been holding back, and then you just unload, and then guys are, why'd you write that? Someone had to. Okay, I'm here for you.
Cathartic is what you might call.
Yeah, I could just see the guys with one foot on the locker, putting their fist, pounding their fist. Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Now,
were you covering when Proby was with the Hawks?
Yes. And Proby was one of my, lived a block from me. So I would go out running and I would, his wife and his twin daughters were, great, great family. And Proby was a gentle giant. I mean, you felt bad for him because his demons never went away. And ultimately they did him in.
Yep.
But he was a likable, gentle guy. I remember that.
That's what I've always understood.
The TV guys would come in and want to do a post game or an off day, whatever. And they would turn on the light on top of the camera. And are you ready? And they're like, are you ready, Proby? He's like, hold on, let me put my teeth in. And he would turn around and get his fake teeth from the top shelf of his cubicle and pop in because, being what he did for a living, he didn't have many teeth left.
Right.
But he put in his teeth and do the interview. But yeah, he was a very likable guy.
Did any writer ever get on the wrong side of Proby in Chicago?
No, guys like Stu Grimson and Proby, they off the ice, you wouldn't know that they were the.
You know why? Because they got it all out of their system.
Yeah. No, Proby would tell the stories just like every up and coming tough guy who's going to be in the NHL. The only way they're staying on an NHL team is if they drop the gloves.
I'll tell you something. I actually saw that. I had really good seats one game, and I can't remember. It might have been Edmonton, this young kid known as a fighter. He started with Probert, and as soon as Probert turned around and dropped his gloves, I swear this guy turtled on the ice. He just had this last-minute decision of, I'm going to get killed. I'm not doing this.
Well, see, but Proby would tell you there were those guys, but Proby would say the brash guys would come up and say, "Hey, you got to dance with me. You got to do me, you know,
please, please. This means my career."
Yeah, right. I got to show. I earn my, you know, earn my props here. I got to go against you and show them I can do it. And he said, "You get tired after a while."
I'm sure he's like, "Again?
Yeah, again? Okay. Yeah, we're going to do this. All right. Drop the gloves. Here we go."
Well, you're a prize fighter like that.
Yeah.
Everybody wants you.
Yep.
312-332-3776. We went down the rabbit hole, but sometimes that happens here.
Yeah.
On ESPN 1000's Hanley and Xander will be back. Talking about talking baseball, we're going to cover the Bears as well, and we're just kind of waiting for that big sounder to hit for another very minor trade from the Cubs, possibly. I don't know.
Any trade from the Sox would be welcome.
There should be. Would you not agree there should be more action on the north side than south side?
In sheer numbers, yes. Yeah. But of magnitude.
Impact, it better have bigger impact than the south side.
I mean, technically, there's construction up there right now, so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, whatever you're going to get for Wilson Contreras will probably end up in your farm system. So I would say the impact will still come from the south side because that's
The immediate impact, let's say, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to delayed. We'll get back to talking about that. If you want to jump in, 312-332-3776. Have a couple of polls up at ESPN 1000 on Twitter. We'll be right back.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Facebook at ESPN Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Tanley, Xander, ESPN 1000. Xander, rocker, all one word, one R in the middle. And you are B. Hanley at 534?
No, underscore, Brian.
Brian Hanley, underscore 534?
No, just Brian Hanley, 534.
Okay, I should pay attention more, I guess.
That's right.
312-332.
I can change it for you if you want.
No. You got a million followers already. You're such a stud on Twitter.
I am.
I'll make the adjustment.
I told you how I started that, right? Mike Thomas, who, you know, hired me.
Yeah, yeah. Around the same time.
Yeah. He said, "Hey, I see you're not on Twitter." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm, you know."
Were you really not? Wait. You weren't on Twitter at that point?
I was never on Twitter until like 2 years ago.
No kidding.
And he said,
"I had no idea."
Yeah, well, and neither did he. And he said, "You know, right. I think you should be on Twitter." I said, "Yeah, that's probably not my thing." And he said, "No, it's not really a suggestion."
So get her done.
So Danny Zetterman got her done for me. He sat in the studio and said, "Okay, what do you want to do for your?"
Interesting. You know, yeah. I was on Twitter, but as a radio personality on music stations where I spent most of my career. Sometimes you're just retweeting breaking news, you know, somebody dies, but it isn't really conducive for that. And I never really found my footing. But now that I'm talking sports and I still talk music on Twitter, it's just more conducive to that. So,
well, I just figured I had 4 hours a day to you know, express whatever I wanted to express.
Yeah, what else are you going to do?
Yeah,
but in this day and time, it's 24/7. Aren't you waking up in the middle of the night? Breaking the breaking news on your Twitter feed? No?
No, that's just because I'm 62.
That's the, okay. Yeah. Well, neither am I, and I'm not 62. Not yet. All right, so today, 50 years ago, something really cool happened.
He's got this one in line to center. That one over, and he falls down. Ball bounces over him, goes back to the screen. Two runs will score. Allen is coming to third. They're waving him in. Come on, Dick, and inside the park, over on.
I think that was Blylevin. He terrific curveball. I knew it's going to take a. He was still tracking the ball down. Had to take a perfect throw to get me at home. So I wind up being safe. And again, I don't know if Burke was insisting on the same pitch, same two times in one game. I'd done my running for the year.
I found that on Twitter. That is the late great Dick Allen. Who? Why isn't he in the Hall of Fame? You know, congratulations to the family of Minnie Minoso. That was celebrated yesterday. But Dick Allen had two inside the park home runs on this day 50 years ago, July 31st, 1972, which, remember, it was like a month ago we relived the chili dog game.
Yeah.
So we had a hell of a season in 1972, number 15. For your Chicago White Sox, a guy who should be in the Hall of Fame and will be at some point. And by the way, I'm going to put out everybody. I said Xander Rocker. This is not very typical, but I'm dying to have a Richie Allen jersey, and I cannot find one. Anybody have an extra large, number 15? Reach out to me on Twitter if you want to get rid of it. For some reason, they're not selling them. You can find Bill Melton's and everything. I don't know if the Allen family has something to do with that, but you can't find number 15 Allen, especially the road ones, which is what I want from 1973.
And you know, you heard him say, I did my running for the year.
Yes, yeah, he was a funny guy. And he was a short guy. He was built like a brick house.
Yeah,
not huge Jack. Arms, not Jack. And Steve Stone actually referenced him yesterday. He said something like, you know, Richie used to wear the long sleeves. And he told him, because they were teammates in 1973, he said, Richie, if I had your arms, I'd be showing them off
the gun
all
show.
Year yeah. round. It was a gun show, a serious gun show. And it was really great to see that on Twitter, so I thought I'd bring that up today. And by the way,
here's a guy who would smoke in the dugout, too. I mean, the fact that he had two inside the park.
I know there's that famous Sports Illustrated cover where he's juggling with a cigarette in his mouth. Yeah. I will say this. If you're fascinated by Dick Allen, Richie Allen, he wanted to be known as Dick Allen, but Harry Carey would not stop calling him Richie. I wonder if that caused an issue. But I digress. There is an excellent book called Chili Dog MVP. Eckhart Press, Chicago-based, put it out a couple months ago. And I have a copy. I'm reading it right now. And it's just really fascinating about the Sox at that time, Richie Allen, Dick Allen, and that game, and so much more. And I'm maybe about a third through it, but it's a fabulous book. I'll put the link up on Twitter. Good stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Who was the center fielder? Washington, was he on that team?
Claudel Washington wasn't until late 70s.
Okay, I love it. And someone in bleachers always had the banner hanging over the wall, Washington slept here. Not big fans. So.
Yeah, I know. I remember that. Claudel. He was on the collared teams. Remember the old script with the collars and everything, and a couple games in the shorts.
The Sunday games. So they're always Sunday shorts. That was Sunday the uniform. Yeah.
It was only a couple times though.
Yeah, that was Bill Beck's deal.
His wife came up with that idea.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know.
Yeah. Yes. She came up with that idea. I'm sure the players rolled their eyes and they slid a couple times and they said, that's enough of this. That is enough of this. 312-332-3776. Fresh off a win for the White Sox yesterday. The heroics of Gavin Sheets, a guy who we've been looking for consistency. He's finding his way. He's a young guy. You know, a lot of upside. You know, anybody's guess, and if he will be, you know, trade bait at the deadline or even off season, right? Because we have a glut of first basemen, right? We have Andrew Vaughn, we have Jose Abreu, Gavin Sheets is a natural first baseman. Yasmani Grandal, when he isn't DHing or catching, is a first baseman, although that's really just, you know, aside.
Right.
But when Jose and his contract is done after this year, he's 37 years old, you know, hopefully I would like to see him retire as a member of the White Sox. But at some point, maybe he's just a full-time DH, and then what happens with Aloy? A lot of off-season questions, but what's going to happen by the trade deadline, which is just 2 days away from right now, 5 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon?
Yeah, I'd love to hear from Sox fans. If you were Rick Hahn, are you looking at this as a Sox fan? Are you looking at the 50-50 team, the 50 wins, 50 losses?
Which is exactly where they're at right now.
Right, and saying, okay, we can't make a big splash by Tuesday at 5 o'clock because we're not going anywhere this year. Or you look at it, even with all the issues on the field and all the injuries and all the stops and all the starts, you can still win this division, and you have to be in it to win it. And so Rick Hahn should be doing all he can to make sure this team is a playoff team. I mean, how do you look at it? Do you look at it big picture, or you just want a playoff series or two, or hopefully more? 312-332-3776, because it'll be interesting. You could. There are a lot of teams out there, like Boston and some of these other teams, that are only three or four games out of a playoff spot, like the White Sox find them. And they're going to be sellers, and big time sellers, right?
Wait, are the Red Sox that close to a wild card?
I think they are to a wild card, but you know,
okay. I mean, it's been a rough season for them.
Yeah. So But there are other teams who are just saying, you know what, we're not going to do anything this year. So whatever offers, keep them coming.
We'll yeah, you know what, though? Out. We were sold such a bill of goods, I can't imagine that they would roll over. But it's interesting concept. 312-332-3776. Phones are starting to stack up after the break, I should say. We'll get to them. And I also have the starting lineup for your Chicago White Sox on the home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000.